Thank you, Madam, and good afternoon, honorable members. In terms of Rule 53A of the Assembly Rules, sub 12, whenever a member is physically removed from chamber in terms of this rule, the circumstances of his removal must be referred by the Speaker within 24 hours to a multi-party committee for consideration. After the incident, I think it was on the 4th, in fact, the same day, the ATC of today, the same day, the matter was referred to the committee with scheduled copies of the ATC. Now, the understanding obviously is that when the matter then comes up before the Rules Committee for consideration, then the report will be made available. So there is a report by the Honourable Speaker on the matter that has been signed off, so the committee can guide on that. So the matter is technically before the committee for consideration. There has also been a letter received from the Honourable Shane Hazen. The letter is about the ruling made by the Deputy Speaker on 12th of May, which relates to coding of judgments of the courts of the Republic. Mr. Shane Hazen is referring the principle of the matter to the Rules Committee for consideration. The letter was received, and we are putting it before this committee for it to decide as to how and when to deal with it. There is a third matter, but this one is already reflected.
Sorry, I'd like to refer to the first matter, if I may, while our minds are still fresh. Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, if one looks at the referral of the matter to the Rules Committee, there's a number of additional matters that refer to us, including unrevised Hansard's video recordings, etc., as well as what I would imagine would have to be a report. Firstly, this was not on the agenda, it was not reflected on the agenda of this meeting, nor, as a member of this committee, was I ever to particular items that you referred to this committee. It would therefore have been impossible for me, as committee member, to apply my mind sufficiently when this matter would come up for discussion at this committee today. And that's the point that I was trying to make in the House. Now, I accept if you want to this committee makes a resolution on how we're going to go forward on it, but as of 10 minutes ago, I wasn't even aware that this was to be discussed at this particular matter. This was not on the agenda of the circulator.
No, that's true, Honourable Speaker. Can we just finish with the report and how we decide to deal with the matter? I think now let's just decide how we deal. Because right now, I know I did deal with the matter immediately in terms of agreeing that it must be 80 feet, and you said that we are proceeding with it according to our past decision. But the practicality of how these things happen is something much more different from a good idea. You know, I have now a big fight dealing up with this matter. And that's what I think we must just ourselves apply our mind on and say how then, in fact, do we deal with such issues. That's what Masilela would like us to focus on.
There are in fact two of these matters before this committee. In fact, actually two. The first removal of members, I think Honorable Borotto was the chair, and then Honorable Deeds are given their justice appropriation, and Honorable, and the one that the Chairman Speaker was presiding. And the last time the matter came before this committee, there was then a fair discussion on an appropriate structure that has to deal with this, because the rules is to a multi-party committee. It was referred to the Rules Committee in the absence of that other structure that would deal with the matter. I do know that in the current half rules, there is a proposal that a subcommittee of this committee must grapple these issues. So the rule, this draft isn't necessarily saying this committee must deal with them, but it's creating a structure that must deal with them. So I think this committee has to decide whether this structure, for the time being, deals the matter, or you await the creation of that structure. I think that is for the committee to decide.
I don't see this Rules Committee is that piling on his own agenda, because we know we have an agenda that just goes on and on and on. And the time to find for discussion and proper attention to each matter on our agenda tends to, you know, carry on even for years for that matter. So another structure or a sub-structure sounds to me like, in fact, it was the very way we had originally thought we should, you know, deal with such a circumstance. Honorable Shane Nathan?
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. I don't want to think what the Honorable Chairperson will speak about later, but there was a discussion in the subcommittee on this and agreement that there would be a subcommittee of this body which would look at these matters. However, I would like to say that I think that what we should do today is, in the interim, because I don't know when these rules are going to be passed, is to set up a subcommittee of this body to dispose of these three matters prior to the adoption of the new rules. So we're not carrying through a process from previous rules. What we'd want is, once the new rules are passed, to have a new dispensation of the rules. And so I would imagine that we would want to dispose of these three particular matters prior to the adoption. We can't do that unless we resolve to form a subcommittee of this body prior to the adoption of those rules.
Okay. There's a proposal from Honourable Ian Aiden. Honourable Chiwin.
I think one thing that we should put up front, Speaker, is that we are dealing with each other here truthfully. And therefore, if all of us are in agreement that we need to create a body, that body will be the body we have created, and in terms of the rules that will be taken to Parliament for adoption. And indeed, whatever matter, and you are correct, Speaker, that if we're to take the matters as envisaged to be taken to that body, to this Rules Committee, we will not even dispense with those issues. So the correct approach is what is proposed, that we create a subcommittee of the Rules Committee. And that creation of a subcommittee of the Rules Committee does not preclude us taking the rules as they are for adoption by the House. From where I'm sitting, Chair. But that's where I'll slightly differ with Honourable Steyn Nation, because indeed, in principle, we are saying if we agree that whatever issues that arise from 53A needs to be taken to a multi-party forum, and that forum is the subcommittee of the Rules Committee, that's the principle that we are agreeing on. And that's the committee that we will then have to establish, in my view, Chair. But that is dispensing of all with all those issues is not necessarily a requisite for us to adopt the rules in the House. We have serious difficulties, and we can't be operating on old rules. We need to do justice to our rules of the House.
Honourable Itakane and Honourable Steenhagen.
Madam Speaker, because it's part of the proposal that we put forward, I do think that we may have to put the proposal forward, because we have also to decide what is the functions of this team that will be set up before we even take a principal decision. Because if we take a principal decision, if people know what is it that's going to do, I think because it is part of our report, maybe before the end of the meeting we should have dealt with it in details. And then we can see whether we take it internally to the chamber for adoption in order for us to start setting up that team, or we wait for the conclusion of the entire team. I think to me that would be far better to do that way, Honourable Speaker, because we have agreed in principle even on the current year. I think the same of April, 2015, we agreed this team, this multi-party team. But we are not decided that this rules for it, what should be the functions and the powers of this team. There are proposals that are put forward for it to consideration by the rules for it. Once we have decided on that, we can then decide to take it forward on this team.
I want to insert another question. Is this subcommittee necessarily a different one from the subcommittee we already have? The Rules Committee is a subcommittee. Okay? Is the subcommittee that has been dealing with issues, engaging, considering options, come back to report to the Rules Committee, and then you know, the process has really been led through that exercise? Does it necessarily have to be a different committee than that already existing subcommittee, is my question. Honourable Steenhuisen?
The answer to your question is no, it doesn't have to be, and I think that the team has worked particularly well, and I think that the team understands the new dynamic in Iran, which we unfortunately are being forced to operate on in this parliament. That being said, however, I just want to say I would like us to get these reports dealt with, because you know, we're going to start running into a situation of justice and justice denied. And there may well be implications of them. The second point why I suggest that we try and disperse of these ones before the final adoption of those rules is that there may well be lessons learned from those processes that would want us to alter how we, you know, actually finally adopt it. And it may not work. It may be ungainly. There may be other rule changes that we require, but that would then allow us the opportunity to do is to fine-tune those before the final adoption. Otherwise, what's going to happen is we're going to pass these new rules, we're going to say it's a new order, and then 3 months later we're going to have to come back with amendments because things are not working out as well as it would. That's how it's to be.
Okay, Honourable Member, Honourable Members, we now understand those three issues that I thought I wanted to put before us upfront. Now, in view of the proposal by Honourable Dagane, I think we can come back to these issues before the end of the meeting. So that we can allow ourselves to make progress on the agenda. The issue of a letter from Honourable Steenhuisen. Hey, Honourable Steenhuisen, so troublesome. Apparently we can't proceed with the letter from Honourable
Steenhuisen. I'm very troublesome, because they've been very short-tempered with me today, which is very unlike you. I don't know if the EFF propaganda is working on you.
I'm not short-tempered at all. Okay, Mahmoud, just present the letter. This is from yesterday. Huh?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
No, ma'am, I think the point really is that Mr. Steenhuisen had indicated that he would bring the principle of the matter before this committee, and he has now done so. So the question is, will the committee consider it today or at another occasion? So the matter is before the committee, could be on the agenda or under further business. We'll make copies for it to circulate it.
Yeah, it's a letter relating to a ruling handed down by the Deputy Speaker in the House on the 12th of May. And he has attached the copy of the ruling. And explain the matter.
I think the issue is a ruling was given by the Deputy Speaker on quoting court rulings or judgment orders, as well as quoting newspaper and other materials. So the member had difficulties with the principle of the ruling itself. In terms of established practice procedures, the member has a difficulty with ruling. They accept it in the House, and they raise the principle of the Rules Committee. And the member is doing that. So the point, ma'am, as I said earlier, is whether the committee will do the matter now or we shall pay for another occasion.
Now, it's before the Rules Committee itself. So the issue now is for the Rules Committee to decide, are we putting it on today's agenda for attention by ourselves? Are we deciding on a different mechanism for consideration of the actual principles raised in the matters in the letter of the honourable member. That really is the issue. Honourable Ntagane?
Madam Speaker, my proposal is that maybe if we do a better end, we should refer that to the subcommittee. And then the subcommittee can then work it out and come back to the host committee whenever it seeks to present a report. I think it would be very difficult sometimes the rule as big as it is to have a thorough discussion on the matter. We need a lot of conversation, some of the issues have been there. That would be my proposal.
Is
that
fine with you,
Honourable Steenhuisen? Madam Speaker, I'm not comfortable with it, and I'll tell you why. I very seldom refer things to the committee. This is the first time that I've actually now formally tabled a matter in this Rules Committee for discussion because we regard it as a very serious infringement on the rights of members of Parliament to do their job, and affects the very privileges that members of the House have granted. It's not the ones around aspersions, etc. I'm specifically referring to the principle that the Deputy Speaker's ruling that you cannot quote from judgments of court if these are in any way aspersions on a member. Bearing in mind judgments of court are not aspersions, they're findings of as a result of due process and both parties being heard. And I think it would simply be absurd that members of Parliament would not be able to quote from constitutional court judgments or from judgments of the court if these were not uncomfortable for members of the House. I would also urge that there is some urgency on the matter, and we're regarding it as a very serious matter, an assault on the freedom of speech in the House. And with respect, the House is due to rise next week for 3 months, and then we're due to come back only after that. And so, I mean, obviously, we would like to indicate that we will be taking this matter further if need be, but we don't believe the ruling can stand as it currently does. Happy to refer the principle to the subcommittee, but in the meantime, members' rights in the House are being infringed upon, and we regard this very seriously.
We agree with Honourable Steenhuisen that indeed the matter needs attention of the Rules Committee through the body that is being proposed. There is agreement on this. And indeed the body can fast-track. Because if we will all need clarity, if there is no clarity on the part of Steenhuisen on this matter, then obviously there will be no clarity on many members of Parliament. Therefore, the sooner all of us have clarity on the matter, the better. So the only rider that I could put on this chair is that, yeah, the matter is referred. Obviously, we can't with it now. We don't have the judgment before us. We don't have the relevant origins of the quotations. So some work needs to be done at any rate, but it can't be done now. Therefore, I concur with the view that let it go to a subcommittee and let the subcommittee prioritize this as a matter of urgency. Even if the subcommittee deals with this matter before we even rush.
I think we should say the subcommittee must meet urgently because in any case it's not the only issue before it. And it is desirable that in fact it should report back to the Rules Committee before we write. If we can put it that way, then the commitment. Honourable Steenhuisen?
Thanks very much, Madam Speaker. If there is a commitment that is to be dealt with before your eyes, I'm very comfortable with that. But bearing in mind that this body is not meant to apply minds to the facts, etc., those would have been done when the presiding officer was delivering the considered ruling in preparation for it. We merely to apply minds to the principle of ruling that it's not acceptable to use quotations of court judgments in the House. And this is that principle. But if there's a commitment and consensus that we can deal with this before we rise, then that's fine. But I certainly don't want us to come back with members' hands being shackled in such an unconstitutional way.
I think we should note that. It should be part of what in fact informs how the subcommittee looks at the matter. Honourable Waters?
Just on a point of clarity, the Honourable Chief Whip said we don't have the judgments in front of us to look at. The fact is this ruling doesn't pertain to one judgment. It pertains to every single judgment that's ever been given by a court of law in this country. That's how profound it is, and deep it is, and the assault on freedom of speech.
And that's why I went to Peter Parable's teenagers and said, no, it is assault. It's my view and I'm sticking to it. Well, then you can have your view. I'm sticking to my view. And I'd like your protection, Jay. But so that's why it's so important that we deal with this matter as soon as possible.
Honourable Deputy Chief Whip, and I now really want us to go back to the agenda. So, Deputy Chief,
Honourable Speaker, we agree with what the Chief Whip has said. On the issue of judgment, we interjected when members were misquoting and misleading the public, because that is not what the judgment was saying on that day. So, the Honourable Members wanted maybe us to not correct what they were saying, because they misled the public and the House, so we couldn't deal with that. We couldn't address that in the House. So it's good that this matter is referred to the subcommittee. We are going to deal with it in the subcommittee, and we'll have the judgment, all of them.
Thank you very much. In fact, that's what I want, that the matter and the evidence and the submissions be made, even yours, Honourable Chairman, please make them in the meeting of the subcommittee. Please, Honourable Chairman, may I not recognize you at this point? I've recognized them. No, if there's one person I've recognized, it's you today. Honourable Members, apologies. Are there any apologies?
Absolutely, because there are implications for this. Are we saying then that it's now referred to the subcommittee and is going to dispose of the matter before the House rises?
Yes. Yeah.
Member, I received my apology from Mr. Karim.
The agenda? Is there anything else that... The agenda is fine. Can we look at the minutes? Is there any issue with the minutes as a whole? May I have a motion for the adoption of the minutes? Honourable Smith moves. Is there a seconder? Deputy Chief Whip seconds. Are the matters rising, Mr. Clement?
Ma'am, the matter is a draft also before the committee.
Okay.
The last meeting that will be approved.
Okay. Can we now get the report from the subcommittee on the review of rules?
Madam Speaker, today the report was circulated, and I won't read it read by read. I just talk on the report. The background information is that on the 18th and 20th of November 2015, the Rules Committee considered draft 8, and we broadly accepted in principle all that was proposed. Of course, there are some patches that were objecting to EFF in attitude, but generally accepted the principles of the rules, and we agreed that the language issue can be worked out and technicality can be worked out. What we are proposing on the seat is that the draft 8 now is draft 9, because after that we met several times as a subcommittee or a task team, as it's called, preparing for this meeting. There were only the issues that were referred to us. One issue was the nature and the function of the multi-party committee. That was the issue that was before us. Another issue that was referred to us as an issue of the recusal of the presiding officer from the chair, if there are matters of personal interest or conflict of interest. There's another issue that was referred back to us by the Honourable Speaker, was the removal of the President from the office in terms of Section 89 of the Constitution. And another issue that was referred to us was the draft guidelines. All the report, the draft guidelines are presented for your consideration. On the work on the subcommittee that we are agreeing on now, we have raised some issues there. Firstly, the one point was the accuser of the presiding officer from the chair. And then there's a rule already that is existing. That is rule 19A. The rule 19A is there now, but we call the declaration of private interest. And the upon it, and we think that we should present some options. The option then will read, the presiding officer must recuse himself or herself from the presiding at a meeting of the House when there is a reasonable apprehension of bias on the grounds of direct personal interest of that presiding officer in the business before the House. If there is a direct personal interest, not a political interest, you know, because all of us are politicians here, but there is a direct personal interest. Maybe one of the boys sitting there got personal interest in an issue that is before the House, then we think that the presiding officer can be able to use himself to allow another presiding officer to preside on it. That is an option that we are putting forward, bearing in mind that 19A is there in terms of the elevation of the private interest. That's the issue that we wanted to make as a proposal, that if the Rules Committee considering for adoption or amendment, whatever the Rules Committee wants to change, we thought that that one can be cleared, because we have already indicated what is the function of the speaker, the authority of the speaker to the speaker, and how we vote them in and also how we vote them out. I think that's what I said that on the meeting on the 18th and 20th. On the issue of the move of the president, we are making a proposal on the speaker that this matter is much more difficult than we thought. And we are proposing that we have made proposals, and there are all viewers that we should take it to both our parties to look at our proposals. We have made some guidelines on that. We also advise that general members of parliament can outsource their responsibility. And that members of parliament have to deal with this matter themselves, because there was a discussion whether you can outsource it to judges, whoever, who's not directly a member of parliament. But we are advised by very senior people in terms of the law that members of parliament have to deal with this matter. I think a case in point now is, of course, the Brazilian situation. That's how really we thought this matter is very important. Though this one is not impeachment, it's the removal of the president. We know that popular now is called impeachment, when it's not more impeachment in our constitution. We thought this one had proposed some issues for discussion by political parties. We are not recommending in this meeting for adoption of that, because it is very complex issue that we need political discussion and political clarity by the political parties. And the only draft guideline on our speaker, with these guidelines that we have presented, but look at them, and then understand what the guidelines are there to make it easy for presiding officer or member of parliament to apply the rules. And we have looked at the guidelines. As far as I know, the subcommittee was made with the guidelines, because they are in line with the draft code that we have made. And then there are guidelines in terms of the international requires approval of the rules committee. We have put a lot of guidelines on chapter 3, guidelines in chapter 5, chapter 7, and then chapter 10. And I think all the chapters we have need guidelines. There are guidelines that we have already drafted. And we look at the guidelines. Our rule is that maybe the rules committee will not need to discuss each and every guideline, because we have agreed brought on the rules in terms of the principles. And also at the meeting, we agreed that the language issue, those who are good in language, there's no issue as long as the principles are agreed. They can improve may and shall and will. We thought that was not a big issue on that. That the guidelines that are proposing now, the guidelines on appointment of whips from all our parties, all of them are detailed in terms of the guidelines. I think I'll try to avoid the Honourable Speaker to read them, because I've already presented the view of the chancellor that the guidelines as they are drafted now, they are correct, because they assist in the application of the rules. And one issue that the Honourable Speaker that we have not agreed on, generally speaking, is that lies on the test code. Rule 45, as we agreed in our committee, while that the members at all times are called presiding officer of the National Assembly, members to respect and conduct themselves with dignity in accordance with the doctrine of the House, are required to dress in a manner befitting the dignity and decorum of the House, and may further be provided for in the guidelines approved by the Rules Committee, provided that no party symbol they may be displayed. The point when I was speaking at this one was that sometimes maybe put it in the rules in details can be very difficult when one puts in the rules. Sometimes we have to amend the entire rules. But the guidelines will be easy for us to work them. Because then on the guidelines says members not to assess this way, and that's where I invest today. And I saw there's a danger of Makarapa. and then I became the head of the state in December. And then people have turned to protection services in a manner that was very dangerous, very harmful in the situation. We thought that those are issues that we are going to put on the guidelines, and then all other things that we don't want members of parliament to do. But also at the same time, we are not trying to constrain the freedom of choice and freedom of expression by members of parliament. And then our view is that the rule is the same, not just that is correct, and we should stick to that rule, and then allow them the guidelines to be developed immediately after the rules committee has accepted that is the rule. Then we can then deal with specific issues that will be there. On 49 and 45, when I was speaking, there are some adjustments in terms of reference to records. We try to deal with this matter by saying members must at all times accord a presiding officer of the National Assembly and members to respect in the conduct themselves in a dignity. And then in accordance with the decorum of the House, and are required not to bring weapons of any kind, nor dangerous offensive in article, I think matter of fall under a threatening and article or object, not replicas of any such article or object into the chamber, excluding a casual object with the prior approval of the speaker. Maybe a person in San Loma or Sanusi comes there for a specific purpose, if the speaker approves that, to be only the speaker that approves that. But we thought that we should really be strict in terms of what you bring in the chamber. Because many members started complaining about the water gun in the chamber, saying that generally shooting us out there, but was there, therefore we tried to ensure that I'm much more specific on this. And the another issue that we have dealt with on the speaker was information required from the executive chief relating to the detail of cabinet members and the minister. That is the 316A communication. The view was that the leader of government business must inform the speaker and receive without delay of the appointment by the president of a deputy president, the other cabinet members, and the deputy ministers in terms of section 91-93 of the constitution. If such appointment are made or changed, and B, the details of the powers and functions formally assigned or delegated to each at the time of appointment or subsequently. Upon receipt of this communication in terms of travel work, the speaker must table it without delay, telling it relevant in the agencies. The point that was made there that is important for us to know exactly what is delegated to the leader of government business in terms of the function, what is also given to members just for information. When members are posing questions, the staff will be able to know that it's not delegated here, this is delegated authority of function, therefore they'll be able to give it. We thought that it's important to clarify it that way. There are issues on our speaker that technical adjustments. We thought on that one, was not very leading up to have a lot of discussion on that. On the rule that has been proposed already, and then the setting up of the Matching Act Committee, subcommittee on the physical removal of members from the chamber. We are just stating it that way, Mr. Speaker, and not necessarily the correct language. But there are times that we differentiate between other committees that may be set up from time to time. The point that we are raising there, Honorable Speaker, is 174A composition. Our view is that should be the Deputy Speaker. And then, if it was not presiding at the chamber, it's in page 4 of our report. That's the composition of the team that we already discussed, General Speaker. And then, in a week, from each party in the assembly, nominated by the party, and any other member that may be designated by the speaker. We have put in the option there on the speaker for consideration. The composition ANC3, DA2, FF1, other passes too. The view was that we shouldn't have a big subcommittee. It should be a very small committee that is going to meet and take decision in advance and report that recommendation and report to the speaker. There was another view that was proposed that maybe there will be no harm to have this composition, but allow our parties when in the assembly, the 18 parties or in all, to come and attend a meeting with the unprotected if a member of the ISP is taken out because of ever misbehavior, at least a member of the ISP, even if it's not us, those who are delegated here, can attend to ensure that we are able then to have discussion on some of the issues. The decomposition remain like that if we agree the composition, but we allow the other members to appear there. And the point that we are raising that the deputy speaker should be a person or anyone is appropriate to the house chairperson is provided for is approved for. But I would like the deputy speaker to be a person chairing this committee. And the functions and powers 1, 2, 3, and 4, we are raising a point there that the subcommittee must consider the circumstances of the removal of a member from the chamber reported to it by the speaker in terms of 3.12, taking into account all relevant aspects, including the conduct of a member concerned, the ruling by the relevant presiding officer in C, the manner in which the member was removed. 2, in carrying out this function, the subcommittee may exercise such powers contained in Rule 138, as it may require. 3, the subcommittee's mandate in considering the contents referred to does not extend to a disciplinary procedure. We are trying to avoid regular detention. And it is almost a quasi thing, really, of peer review. We don't know exactly what we can call it, but it's not an issue. And then, but also the team won't be there to formally review of the presiding officer's ruling. We can't sit there and say that no, speak we're wrong, that and that. Of course, it all factors and report back to the Rules Committee, and the Rules Committee then can take a decision. 4, we're saying that the subcommittee must report this finding to the Rules Committee within 10 working days, including any recommendation it may make based on those findings. That's the point that we are raising on the state. And then that is the functions and powers of that subcommittee. In terms of rule, the general rule of a committee is 138B. That is the general rule of the subcommittee. That always report back to the parent committee, because the subcommittee of the parent committee or the main committee. On this one, I will speak 17.5. And then we have registering of the subcommittee side in terms of rule 153. How do we meet? Do we meet badly? Sometimes we may not have to meet badly, depending already on the circumstances on matter referred to the subcommittee. I think there will be justification on time for the committee to decide on that, but only to that in terms of Rule 152. Other issues on the speaker, they were really consequential rule amendment. But public access on the speaker is an issue that also will be considered, I guess, by the Rules Committee. Because also the observation in today is that members of the public were invited as guests. When members are removed from the chamber, they hands, they walk down and be part and parcel of the problem. And then we think it's a bigger problem, really, that one, because first we don't know when they're armed or not, they are there, and the members are taken out today, then they are bringing members there, but I think we're causing half of dinner. But I invite the guests, whoever invite them. Some way we should work out in a minute as well, but not to have a situation like that. On the consequential amendment, Honorable Speaker, that's the point that we are putting there, adjusting rule report A. And then there are some proposal for further adjustment. All these adjustments, when I was speaking, just like withdraw meaning leaving the chamber. Just call it in the language, making it simpler for members of the National Assembly to understand. We don't think we should go one by one on it, because I think all the sub-rule A that's indicated there, 5 or any sub-rule A or 11, and then H6 is a consequential one. Yeah, that is an appendix B. There are these proposed further adjustments, really. They are just for language purposes here. Page 5. They are just language draft B. And then... Appendix B. Proposed further adjustment to draft 9 of the National Assembly Revised Rules. There's Rule 52, Rule 51.2. We are putting there really, instead of saying a member to withdraw from, I think the member must be the same. What's the language issue? More than any principal point. And then 52A, also on the language issue, in terms of A, that if he or she is the speaker, suspended a member for a period provided for the rules of 54, an order is being ordered to leave the chair immediately. And then it's what the language there, also improving the language there, one of the speaker, but no clear issue, I think, for us. And that on page 6, amending the rule, 53A3, unless already suspended in terms of rule 52, a member is removed from the chamber in terms of sub rule 2, is thereby immediately automatically suspended for a period applicable as provided for in rule 54, and may not enter the prison for the duration of the suspension. Where is the repeat suspension of a member? That a member should not even enter the prison to come. That's how, but they were just improving the language unless already suspended, because the rule already is there on the state. And then 5, that is sub rule 53A11, and there again is the issue that we're dealing with, and the powers and privileges of the people with the WTA. And then 6 was just control of microphones. Even there, we're just improving the language really in order to say, instead of saying, order that a microphone being used by such a member be disabled, we say, disable or switch off a microphone being used by such a member, or order that to be done. And then at that point, there's language improvement on the speaker. And rules 97, there's a part that we are proposing there in terms of rule 97, that if a proposed motion is preceded by another motion of the same substance that has already been approved or rejected on the same day, the proposed motion falls away and may not be read out or moved. A motion of the same content that can't be presented more than 5. And then sub-rule 110.4a, of course, here is a question of maximum immunity. But it's fully the language there. In terms of the questions, and that's the point that we are raising, that instead of confirming the maximum time limit, we are saying there that the total time allowed for reply to question and associated supplementary question under this rule is limited to a maximum of 3 hours. If you can't go beyond 3 hours, should be below 3 hours or exactly 3 hours. That was the language issue there, Honorable Speaker. And then 9, again, is language issue, maximum 3 hours. And then we come to the adjustment of proposed further adjustment of Rule 53A. All our areas, Honorable Speaker, we don't have a problem with the 1, 2, 3, and then the 4. And then we want to propose, we had a long discussion with the state law advisor on the issue, that is sub 10 of 53A, I think it's page 7, in terms of our report. We want to make a point on the speaker that we should retain what we almost persuaded by the state law advisor to remove, because of what happened today. It's very clear that what happened today necessitates that we put sub 10. Instead of deleting, I think the state law advisor was worried about the legality of matter, but I think now you see it other way because we have seen some of the issues. We want also to propose that we retain 11 as was proposed by the subcommittee, because it says that in the event of violence, the reasonable prospect of violence or serious disruption is really in the chamber, and the result of the member resisting to move on, a presiding officer may suspend proceeding members of security services. That's the point that we used to disagree on. But in a situation where public invited guests, they end up getting involved in this outside chamber, we may need to raise security forces to assist. By security forces, in fact, I mean police really, not meaning army and all other people, I mean police, because they're always around there. Otherwise, it would be very difficult for 20 people to deal with invited guests with 100, all of them causing havoc outside the chamber. Because when people are stepping out of the chamber, already those people are down there, almost at the door of the chamber. We thought that we should retain the sub-11 as we are proposing it initially as a subcommittee. I know that sub-11 is part of the existing hiring rule or in the National Assembly that we apply. And then 12, Honorable Speaker, will remain as we are there because it's already there. And 18 of the proposal also remains. It's just improved the language on that. But the proposal that we are putting on our state is that the rules committee should really access that within state 10 terms of this short report, then we are going to ensure that we include some of the issues for draft 9 that are not in draft 9 right now. Because draft 9 only had the power and functions of the magistrate chief. It was not enough proof by the Rules Committee. Once the Rules Committee approved it, and then put it there. But draft 9 is the same, Mr. Speaker. We have captured all the areas that were agreed to by the Rules Committee. And then we try to clean the language from chapter or section 1 to section 15 or chapter 1 to 15. We think now is ready, really, with the approval of the Rules Committee, to be taken to the chamber if this small report also is accepted and the guidelines also accepted. That will be our proposal.
Yes, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Speaker. Speaker, just two specific things. Honourable Matatani was just asking along so well in the subcommittee that he just uses the word agree very loosely sometimes. Very loosely. Speaker, I am the member of the subcommittee that proposed initially the recusal of the presiding officer from the chair. And we did it for a specific reason, Chair, and the reason is twofold. One, the Speaker must at all times be completely neutral and have no bias when something is being discussed in the House. And secondly, ours is one of the very few, if not the only Parliament in the world, where the Speaker isn't required to resign from the political party to which he or she belongs. Now, when you deal with a judgment similar to the one we dealt with now, as you know, Speaker, and I know that this, it's awkward for me to discuss this with you, I'm sure it's awkward for you to hear it, so please let there not be awkwardness while we discuss this. In the specific judgment, you yourself were mentioned personally, and your role was discussed in a very personal matter in the judgment. And therefore, it is humanly impossible to expect that you wouldn't have some kind of emotion, some kind of bias, when an issue involves yourself as a person and the office you hold. Now, it is interesting to note that the one option here says apprehension on bias on grounds of direct personal interest. And Honourable Madakane just said something when he said it must be personal bias and not something like political bias. But unfortunately, you cannot separate the two. It is a very personal thing to belong to a political party. It is who we are. It is who we represent. It is what we do. I am a BANP, and Honourable Madakane is an ANCNP. It is part of our personal nature that we belong to these political parties. And, Madam Speaker, you in your personal capacity are chairperson of an ANC National Executive Committee. And therefore, to say of a direct personal interest, your political affiliation would then be a personal interest. So, Chairperson, it does say the options with an alternative wording could also be considered. And you specifically said that because I indicated in the committee that I would be bringing this argument to the Rules Committee for us to discuss the very nature that you cannot separate the political party to which you belong from your own personal nature, because the two are intrinsically entwined. It is who we are, and it is the nature of our business. Speaker, I'll go further to say that in the meeting, when you were asked to recuse yourself, and you hesitated for a while, and then eventually you did recuse yourself and the Deputy Speaker came into chair, I'm sure it's undeniable that tensions immediately, was due to Deputy Chair, I can't even, someone came in, but that immediately the tensions had diluted themselves because you took yourself out of the situation. And again I say, it is human nature that it is difficult to separate yourself when you yourself are being discussed and something that you aren't linked to is being discussed. You wouldn't be human if you didn't have an emotion attached to it. So, Chair, that's on that particular issue. I strongly feel that we need to say if there is reasonable apprehension of bias on grounds of interest, we take our personal, direct personal interest and we just need interest. And I think that would then make sure. I do want to say this, though, because I know that this is going to be brought up. Mr. Hendricks, during the discussion, said the Speaker acts on behalf of Parliament, and therefore, when Parliament is taken to court, the Speaker is always involved. And it is quite correct. And that is even more reason that the Vicar must recuse, in our case, herself, when the issue has been discussed. Because it is very difficult to be impartial when you yourself have been subject to the legal action. So you have to recuse yourself so that someone who wasn't involved in the court action could take the chair and have a very subjective view. Because if you yourself are involved in the legal action, you have an objective view because you have been involved in the process ab initio. And so I'm preempting the response that will come to say that you will always be the respondent in that case. And in that case, Vika, I would then suggest that you would urge recuse yourself if the issue was brought before the House. Chair, then...
Can I just respond to that first issue? And that is to say that I'm surprised that you put it the way you do, that there is something personal about how I was involved and how I'm reflected in the judgment on the Nkandla matter, because actually there is nothing personal about anything about how I am reflected in that judgment. I am a respondent. Indeed, because I am the speaker, and that is what, in fact, when I was called and requested by political parties to come and meet them for the information of the rest of the Rules Committee, and I went to the venue in G28. One, I was pleasantly surprised by the civil manner in which I was approached by the political parties. Two, I pointed out to them that it would have been good if we had started to engage with each other, not in the manner that I was being insulted and my integrity was being questioned and the public was being given an impression that in fact is a crime that the speaker specifically had been responsible for in terms of the issues that were referred to by the judgment of the Constitutional Court. And I made it very clear that it is my view that, in fact, the contrary is the truth. Because all the speaker or any presiding officer does is to maintain order and make sure that the proceedings of the plenary proceed peacefully and in an orderly fashion. I don't even vote. I did not vote at the point at which the House was adopting the resolution that the judgment refers to. So to say I am personally involved and I have been personally reflected on is actually to distort the situation. And it is known that you will always be in a position, because you are the speaker, you occupy this particular position, to have to be the person called upon on behalf of the institution to sign, to be the one that gives the permission that the paper must be served on the institution, and so on and so forth. Not because I did anything myself directly. So I wish to put a totally different perspective on the matter and to say, as for the speaker being personally implicated, I do not think is the correct view. But I wish you, Honourable Member, proceed to your next point, so that the meeting can then engage on the issues you put on the table.
Thank you, Speaker. Speaker Simon Chain, that I would like to, well, the Democratic Alliance, in the form of myself sitting on the subcommittee, would like to see that the other option for the removal of the recusal of the Speaker is then brought into consideration. Chair, and then in terms of, now you don't have the page numbers as we have them, so the further adjustments to Rule 53A, the insertion of 10-11. Now, Chair, anyone who sits in the Rules Committee will know that this is one of the things that occupied our time for the longest, because obviously one has to look at a way of making sure that your rights as a Member of Parliament remain substantial and that the floor of Parliament remains a substantial area. Now, Chair, one of the things that we did discuss is the subcommittee was the fact that the public gallery cannot be considered as part of the floor of Parliament, because the floor of Parliament is where MPs sit and where MPs participate in debate, and we are under the jurisdiction of the Speaker at that time, and that particular area is sacrosanct. But the public gallery, where the People's Parliament is, open to the public. Now, Chair, even today there were police, armed policemen in the public gallery. And it should be because the public gallery is not the sacrosanct area where members of Parliament are participating in debate. But Chair, I don't think that there was ever any doubt in anyone's mind that the parliamentary security, the parliamentary, what do we call them now, security, protection services, they would never apply to the public and to visitors coming to Parliament. They would apply to members of Parliament. Because we felt very strongly, and as was justified in the outcome of the judgment, Chairs, Speaker, as you well know, a member of Parliament may never be removed by a member of the security services from the House. And I'm really here today. Chair, I have seen the video footage of what happened today. I have seen members of the public gallery running down the stairs, participating in the violence. And when they were outside, I did see that the armed forces did control them. And Chair, I do think that's the way forward. But under no circumstances, even outside the chamber, should a member of Parliament be handled by the armed services. That I think is very dangerous. We are setting a very dangerous precedent. Because, Speaker, I think we must remember this, and you know, we giggle when we say this. But we are not making rules for this Parliament. We are making rules going forward. And Chair, it could be another government that comes into power. And then all of us in this room are removed by police services every time we try and say something in the House. So we must remember in our minds that if we don't just create rules for the sitting Parliament, we're creating rules for Parliament going forward. So, Chair, I would say the inclusion of 10 and 11 remain very worrying to us. And we really keep on the line of becoming unconstitutional and also breaching a judgment made by the court.
Honourable Mashile, Honourable Foley, Honourable Sienese, Honourable Jigiza.
Chairperson, I just wanted to speak on this matter that raises the removal of the presiding officer. You know, especially in relation to yourself, this reference that is made that you are the chair of the ANC and want to remove the section that refers to personal interest, to actually leave it general. And the question, of course, is that if you leave it general, that the speaker has got interest on behalf of the ANC, there is no matter that we discuss in the House that the ANC has got no interest. There is no matter. And in principle, then we'll be saying that, you know, we are actually removing the speaker by hook and crook. Because all the things that we debate in the House, the ANC got interest. And then if you say the speaker, because he's a chair of the ANC, then they got interest in that, and they cannot preside, they must refuse. Then there would never be any occasion that the speaker will preside over anything. And but now the question is that the Constitution doesn't call for the speaker, you know, it's to resign, you know, from a political party after it has been elected. There is no call of like that. But now this rule, to create the rule that actually seeks to really impose an additional meaning to what the Constitution actually expects, that the speaker would be elected among members of the National Assembly who belong to political party and doesn't actually require to resign from a political party, I think the rule then will be unconstitutional. That's what I just wanted to really indicate the complication and the impact of what the Mazur is actually trying to say. Thanks, Sir President.
My understanding, one of the members, we may also discuss something that we have agreed on. And my understanding is that the interim rule 53A was adopted by the National Assembly. It's the current rule. And then it has been applied. The point that we were raising earlier on was that the state law advisor was proposing some wording on that. But we thought that we should retain it as it is, because the multi-party subcommittee will deal with all other issues that may deal with that one. But on many occasions, I don't think we'll ever have a situation where members of the assembly are ejected by security forces. Really, I don't think we'll be in another situation like that. I think in terms of the rules, 10, 10 and 11, I think we should accept it as it is already a rule in the National Assembly. Maybe we shouldn't again reopen a long discussion. We had a long discussion on the 18th and 20th on this matter. Generally, I think we agreed in that meeting, unless there are changes on that. In my view, Honorable Speaker, that is the rule that is applying now. If there are something that are happening that are unconstitutional, of course, that it would be convened. What is unconstitutional about this? And then we can consider the amending things accordingly. But if the rule is stand now, I think we should retain it, routine, set up your multi-party commission, work out on that matter. I'm sorry, Honorable Speaker.
Actually, that's why I was asking you to come quickly. Because, you know, the disadvantage of not having been part of the subcommittee discussions is, or the advantage of you having been there, you know what has been agreed, which is now being reopened or rehashed and we carry on and on, because as far as I am concerned, you know, things are being addressed fresh from, you know. So I really think that what you, this intervention you just made is useful, because you know what has been discussed, and therefore you can say no, but we've already agreed on this matter, because I know from the past that we can revisit things, given an opportunity, we can go on until midnight, which is quite fine by me, if we wanted to sit here until midnight or better feel 6 a.m. So there is an input that says, but we've agreed on this matter. Let us not reopen it. So can we agree to leave 10 and 11? She knows, she says out. Leave 10 and 11 out. I have Honorable Froelich and then CNA, Chief Whip and Honorable Nyan.
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. Speaker, just to get to the point of recusal of the presiding officer, I think it's quite a substantive discussion that's required when it comes to the issue of the Speaker recusing herself. The last thing that we want is a ceremonial Speaker of Parliament who, on the ground of any interpretation, it is possible that a case can be made that she recused or he recused himself from presiding over any specific matter. One thing that this is probably a matter, since it deals with the directly with the election of the Speaker and what happens from that point, that should carefully be dealt with, not in terms of the rules, but in terms of a review, the Constitutional Review Committee should apply itself on this. It's not something that the Rules Committee can take a decision on, because that would be in direct contravention of the same Constitution that all of us protect and defend in this Parliament. So that's my contribution, Speaker. It's not a matter for the Rules Committee to decide that. More work needs to be done in the Constitutional Review Committee.
Just to say, at the meeting of the leaders of political parties and tweets and so on that we had after the judgment, I did make that proposal, that I thought it's a matter of revisiting our constitutional provisions in relation to this particular office. So I suggest that it be dealt with there. If we agree on that, Honorable Senator,
yeah, Madam Speaker, thank you very much. I just want to say from the record that Democratic Alliance has never, ever proposed a constitution amendment or talked to I've said it many times why I think it's completely inappropriate, the two hats that you wear, but nevertheless that a political decision of your party has taken. It's our political decision that we've taken that's inappropriate, but we're certainly not recommending a constitutional amendment. What we do require, however, is that you display a element of non-partiality when you, impartiality, when you are presiding in the chair. And we will continue to call you out where we think that you haven't done it, and as is our political right in the House to do so. And I would like to turn to the issue of the recusal, if I may, because I think that's where the Honourable Mazzoni was directing her comments. Madam Speaker, you say that you have to sign papers, etc. That is correct. But it is at some point with you, as the head of both the and the Vice Minister is quite explicit around it, is that you're also the political head of the parliamentary administration. Now, clearly at some point, a decision is made whether to oppose an application or to defend an application or you know, what the political strategy or legal strategy is going to be. You, as the head, would certainly be abrogating your responsibility if you weren't at the heart of those decisions on whether to proceed to defend an application or to review something. And I think it's our contention that it's that decision-making locus that then takes you in a conflict of interest situation. And we use the example of the fact that you were the first respondent in the last matter that appeared before the Constitutional Court. So, you know, I think that that is the point we're making, that there is then a conflict of interest because the judgment has then come out to which you were you had made a decision to oppose the depose certain affidavits, etc., which became part of the court record. And I mean, those affidavits are freely available and they are signed by yourself, as is the requirement of the law. So I think that's the point we're making there. I mean, certainly, you know, we've got, if one took the argument being made by the Honourable Member at the back to its illogical conclusion, it would be that, you know, every time an ANC member got up the podium to speak, you should recuse yourself. I mean, that's not what we're saying. That's not the intent of the point that we're making. The point we're trying to make with that particular is when there is a conflict of interest and a direct causal link, that there should be a refusal to ensure that there's a fair witness and that the person presiding over the debate does not have a vested interest, whether it's inherent or overt, or whether it's, you know, less overt or inherent, to ensure that there is a fair debate that takes place in the House.
I think it would be awkward if I kept answering for myself. And so I will refrain from it and recognize, according to my list, the Honourable Chief Whip will be followed by Honourable Boy.
We agree. If you have, first of all, where do members enjoy privileges, so that all of us are clear? Members enjoy privileges when they are in the House. In fact, in the House you can say as much as you can, I won't take you to court. Immediately you step out of the House, immediately, you call me all sorts of things, I take you to the cleaners, and that's my law. So, therefore, there can't be anything wrong with 10 and 11 as they stand now. Because indeed the court said that you can't use police in the House. You can't use police in the House. But when there is criminal activities as they happen today, anywhere in South Africa, and you have a member of parliament found being high of the banning of Vuyazwane schools, that's criminal. You can't be asking for protection services to deal with that issue. You ask police to arrest that criminal who happens to be a member of parliament. So I think we should differentiate between the two. But having said that, I agree with colleagues that have said you did not have a personal taste with regard to the Crown Court ruling. You acted in your capacity as the head of the institution. So it was never, ever personal, even on those issues. And that's the part that we, in fact, you responded because of what Parliament had done, because of the resolution that Parliament had passed. And you are correct, Chair, that you did not even vote. I voted. You didn't even vote. That, therefore, for anybody to create an impression that you had an interest, what that was very personal on the matter, can't be true. But the broader issue, and I think all of us should then, and indeed that's one of the issues that we will be discussing, Chair, as you know, at a party level. What type of a speaker do you want? If you have a speaker that comes from a party, whether we have a speaker that comes from the DA in the legislature here, in the Western Cape, and we accept that, rest assured. And we will not ever think that the speaker will have different take on matters that are before the House, the ANC's take on those matters, or the DA's take on those matters. It's just impossible. But having said all that, we expect the speaker to be non-partisan in dealing with the business of the House, giving people time to speak, and also telling you that your time is now up, can you go and sit down, all those issues. And this is what we expect of all speakers, and this is what, in our view, our speaker has done. Now, if we have another notion of how we must elect a speaker and where that speaker must come from, that is another debate. That is another debate. But to speak of recusal, in our view, it will not sit well. Under which circumstances, you know the Honourable Steenhuis and what was that, we had that debate. When you were requesting the speaker to recuse herself, we said there is no basis. We might have a view that she is partisan and that's not a view that we hold. It's not a view that we hold. And even the voting patterns in the House, the speaker does not go and hold Myanmar's in his hand and show him how to vote. In fact, it's the chief who holds his hand and tell him how to vote. The speaker is very, yes, because we have a party line. No question about it. There is a party line. And if the chief member of the majority party that says, this is how we are going to vote, the speaker is very far from the equation. Even if you have better chief member, that is your very quiet. But they get it, that's correct, what we're doing. We are from the community, that's where our headquarters is. But there's no question about it. But I think it's, but that's why we want to take to its logical conclusion. That if a speaker is elected in the manner we do things now, in the manner our constitution dictates, there is no way that you can refute the speaker. That's all I'm saying. There's no way. Unless we change and all of us have a political discussion and we say, maybe there is a need. Indeed, I think the Freedom Front has raised issues of how in other countries, because we are looking at those issues, but we are not convinced that would be the best way. Maybe we must still convince us at party level that that would be the best way of electing a speaker. They have got their own reasons why they opted to go in a wrong direction. But when we elect a speaker in the manner we do, in the manner our constitution dictates to us, you have no possibility of refusal of the speaker.
Then Miami, then the British with then water.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. I wanted to deal with two issues. One on the refusal of the speaker. I agree with my colleagues that I think maybe the issue must not deal with the person that runs the office, because the office and its responsibility also require that the one who holds it must exercise the fiduciary duty that such office beholds. I think also as members, if the speaker would not have responded on that matter, I don't think we would have been happy. So there are certain requirements that goes with whoever holds an office where administrative decisions have to be taken. And for me, that's, I think, the way we should appreciate it. Like any other member of parliament, if we serve in committees, whether in the pensions board or parliament, if I could just make an example on parliament, we may not like parliament, but when the EFF challenged parliament in court, as members of parliament, as a board, we could not sit back and say, let the matter just go. We had to exercise fiduciary duties to protect the interests of members. Until members give us a mandate and say, leave it or change, we could not have done otherwise. So in my view, in the matter where the speaker deals with matters as part of her office, she exercises her fiduciary duties on behalf of the institution. Indeed, there is no way that a speaker on every occasion she would call all of us and say, do I respond or do I respond? Similarly to the president, when he takes executive action on behalf of the executive, he exercises that role of that office. So I just wanted to say, for me, I think the matter as argued by my colleagues is correct, unless we may be persuaded otherwise. Again, I agree on 10 and 11 on Rule 53A. But also just to remind members that I know we might have issues around the involvement of the security services, but it's also important to appreciate that this institution, particularly its president, while it's parliament, we've got a dual responsibility also, because with the other arm of state, given that this is a national key point. So there's a point at which when the institution is actually under threat, the security services will have to exercise their responsibility. And I think these are the tensions in my view that as members of parliament will always have to appreciate that they are there and will continue to be there. And I don't think there's a point, unless there's any violent behavior where a member once she's removed from the house and is outside the prison, we'll have to call security services to remove that member. It would have to be an extraordinary circumstance that would require such a calling. So I would like to propose that at least 10 and 11 as they are prisoners to them in the house.
Madam Dagan, I see you want to say something, but can we allow Nyani to say something?
Oh, yes, yes.
Honorable,
I was going to say it on his behalf.
It's organizing a mass.
Then I was going to say, Speaker, I've been informed by the chair that hotel since the court judgment that has applied to it, so we should remove 10 and leave
11.
So that's what I would
say. So are we agreeing to leave 10, to take off 10, to leave it out?
Yeah.
Honourable Chairman, do you want to fix it?
We can fix it if I may suggest. We can take up 10. But the Honourable Boy is absolutely correct because there is a court judgment around the use of security services to remove members from the precinct and from the premises. I can tell you right now, we know what's going to happen. The first minute these rules are adopted, there's going to be challenges to them. What we don't want to do is to create unnecessary easy wins for people wanting to pick holes in it. On 10 and 11, where you insert the word chamber and precincts, and you use the claim of members, you're going to run foul of the judgments that have been made. So I'm urging some caution on those two ones there. We certainly would propose it on the basis then, of the judgment that's come up, and we're urging caution on that, proceeding on those two.
I thought we were talking about 10 in terms of leaving it out. I was not informed that we are now on to dealing the same way with 11.
Honourable Speaker, the proposal is that we remove 10 because of the ruling. that we can use the security facility in Tenemba. But we leave level as it is in terms of the rule, interim rule that was adopted by the chamber. We think level really doesn't cause any harm to anyone, doesn't cause any problem. We think we should remove here, leave the level.
Because in any case, the law does allow security services to get involved under certain circumstances. And I think 11 is saying in the event of this, that, and the other. Honorable Mazon?
Thank you, Speaker. Because this is a consensus. What is a reasonable prospect of violence? Because, quite frankly, at this stage of the game, I mean, no one, I certainly didn't expect anyone to use a maklaka as a weapon, which I saw being used today. But now, every time someone gets away from the chamber, there's a fist fight. Does that mean that speaking can reasonably foresee that there will be violence? Because even though there was a scuffle today, I was still glad that no gun was pulled and that no arms were used. I mean, what's probably going to make you feel bad. But yeah, I mean, I really was very pleased that it wasn't the armed forces here today, because I think, you know, one gun comes out and then all hell breaks loose. So it's that you can't reasonably foresee anything at this stage of the game, because we're not dealing with a reasonable situation.
The question that Mahlele is quietly asking me here is there any chance that you foresee ever having to call the police into the thing? And I'm saying no.
No.
Because we have parliamentary protection service.
Because that 10 is to be removed.
Yeah.
There is 10 left. Because 10 is in our limit.
Yes,
but
I'm
in a way to fix what other people said. Yeah. Just with regards to the court judgment, the court judgment clearly said no security force can enter the Chamber of Parliament, right? Or I suppose it's by extension of the committee. So in 11 we clearly in the fifth line, I don't want to read the whole thing, this will be too, but the fifth line is chamber. So we're allowing people to come, security services to come in onto the chamber floor, which goes against the constitutional court judgment. Therefore that word chamber has to be removed. So the best thing is fine, it's a chamber.
Yeah, no, you see, this document was the suggested document by the state law advisor. But you see, what is in the rules here is what was in page 29, which is in the event of violence or additional prospect of violence or serious disruption. That is what is in that level, the one that we are retaining. Then you remove that 10. That's page 29. This one has been adopted by them.
I just wanted just to read what we say must either be removed or retained. In Rule 11, as it stands currently, it is in the event of violence or a reasonable prospect of violence, or serious disruption is seen in the chamber as a result of a member resisting removal, the presiding officer may suspend proceedings, and members of the security services may be called upon by the presiding officer to assist with the removal of members from the chamber and the presence of parliament forthwith in terms of section 4.1 of the act. Or may intervene directly anywhere in the presence in terms of section 4.2 of the act when there is immediate danger to the life or safety of any person or damage to property.
So that's the role under consideration.
Now, the key is exactly what rule are we dealing with. And there are some text of the rule, because I'm just picking up that there's some confusion in terms of what we're dealing with.
You see, the issue is, Masilej, the Constitutional Court judgment are about chamber. You know, so we're talking about inside the house. And there's removal of members of parliament and who is removing the members of parliament. That's the issue. Now, if we want to retain 11, we must make sure that it does not put security services inside. So, can we go and just clean it up and make sure it says what we want to say?
Then, can we leave house then? Completely.
Yeah. Yes.
That was to raise the point.
Before you raise the point, there was a hand there. Can I first
thank you, Speaker. I was just wondering, in the document before us, there is a proposed wording. If we remove 11, there is a proposed wording which says, and there is immediate danger to life or safety of any person or damage to any property, the Speaker may A, suspend proceedings, and be authorized members of the security services to act in accordance with Section 4 of the Powers and Privileges Act. Is that not then a better wording? Because it does not refer to the chamber itself, but it refers to some other sort of immediate danger to the life and property of Parliament as well as to members.
Isn't that an option, given that by that time we are no longer dealing with members of parliament being in the house? You are dealing with a situation where there's some danger and you remove members of parliament, but this chaos is chaos that actually befits security forces to help sort out. You are not there, members of parliament. Why are you laughing?
Chair, I think this may help. If you look at Section 4, Sub 2 of the Powers and Privileges Act, it specifically provides that when there is immediate danger to life or safety of any person or damage to any property, members of security services may, without obtaining such permission, without an officer, enter upon the state matters in the precincts, and the chamber includes the precincts, the chamber is part of the precincts. They may take action in the precincts in this requirement that is necessary to avert the danger. Any such action must, as soon as possible, be reported to the central chairperson. So this foreseeing an extraordinary set of circumstances where the security service have to make assessment and have to decide whether they should await authorization from the speaker or whether they need to act immediately.
I think that's what the panel is saying. You know, Manhold also, what we're dealing with here is removal of members from chambers. We've had a court judgment now, which spoken about the use of security services. I would venture to say to you that it would be completely inappropriate for any security service to make its way onto the floor of Parliament without the permission of the Speaker. In any event, I mean, I think the whole point, you know, of this parliamentary tradition of not using security services dates back to when the King used to just send people into Parliament to pull people out of saying things he didn't like. So, I mean, I think that we need to be careful. We're dealing with the removal of members from chamber. I think we've seen that the parliamentary security services are more than adequate and adept at doing their particular work that they need to and removing members. And I think that, you know, rather than run the risk of an easy court victory to overturn the election, which is a slam dunk given the recent judgment, I really think we found each other and we should compromise on that particular basis.
Honourable members, can we agree that no security services in the chamber? Let's revisit the formulation in a manner that makes sure that we keep on the right side of the ruling, as well as of our understanding here that we don't want security services. In other words, no police here. But we must also point out that as for the precinct, we must know that today the precincts of parliament were attacked. Outside the chamber, there was violation and in fact destruction of property inside the precincts, inside the passages of parliament. And so we've got to be very, very alert and conscious of that responsibility that we have. Yes.
Maybe we should consider and what the
end
of our
my experience of this situation since we have the people that we have in the free parliament is that we get distracted from focusing on our work. And our priority is to get back to our work as soon as possible. I don't want to have to get out of my chair, go out into the passages looking at authorized security services, no. I want to focus on the work in the chamber of the house, which is what our people have sent us to come and do. So what I would like to imagine is that the security forces themselves will be dealing with that situation. So surely tomorrow security forces
authorize them there on the passage. They must deal with that situation. Yes, ma'am.
No, I said that you have to draw from the testimony. You can remember. The court is in this one. In the chamber, it means I'm telling. When the chamber is being broken, you were coming back here to say that the protection of this kind of one will be to see the practice.
Leave that situation to the security forces to do what they are empowered by the constitution and the law to do. Our job is to make sure we've got rules that are in keeping with a court ruling, that are in keeping with the constitution, that enable us to remove any obstacles to the work in the chamber. That's what I think we should focus on. Can we then move to the next matter? Maguroto?
To rely on
except for the security services that should come into the center. I'm not saying we should just say they must come, but in terms of data, let's leave the speaker out and maybe the customer trust something where they are going to make sure that if that happens, because that violation is going to be, should that happen, the security forces, how are they going to know it's happening and how would they come in? It must be the chapter leaving out at their school. But we need to protect that ourselves on that very issue of weapons and whatever.
Of course, the law allows it to protect those people, the security services, to deal with the situation that develops. The law already allows them. Everything stands.
So,
speaker,
if you're watching someone, let's just be sure
they're there.
They're there.
They're there.
I want to recognize those people in the back there, but the lady just came to
they will fight and they have beaten the Parliamentary citizens. Some illegal people, bodyguards, private bodyguards people were in the chamber beating the Parliamentary citizens. What if next time they intensify the fight and bring in some weapons? One of the honorable members had a hammer behind their headphones. She had a hammer. She wanted to step on one of the members. So that is a weapon. We have to be looking at the outreach of our situation. We've been threatened with blood in the chamber. And if members of parliament can vitalize the proper parliament, they will take and bring weapons to their house. How safe are we, Honorable Speaker, if the security services will not be called in case of danger? Then.
Ms. Gandhi?
So just to tie in with what the Deputy Cook is saying, we are focusing on the events that have been experienced with members of a party not cooperating. But one has to look more broadly at possibilities, horrible as they may be. The party may come in that's very militaristic, that decides to bring weapons into the chamber, and that decides to fight it out with the protection services in the chamber. And you can get attempted coups, you can get all kinds of things happening, and you must have the ability, exceptionally, to call in the security services to assist and to restore order and to protect life in them. And that, I think, is where this is meant to be going, not to a member who physically resists being removed.
At the back, right at the back, before I take Connie. Talking about honorable members who are sitting here in a very orderly fashion, being very productive. Honorable Connie and then honorable Kumlan.
May I speak, Honourable Speaker? I wanted to suggest that I don't think we must conclude on this issue just like this. I think there's a few thoughts that we need to put together and rather see if we cannot put together make some changes on these proposals. Instead of saying drop the one and then the other one, I don't think, because Madam Speaker, I want to suggest also that what's very clear is that in the chamber we are talking about the patients who are not coming in. I think that one's very clear. But that doesn't mean, Madam Speaker, that your powers end there. The only place where not necessarily you can ask the security forces to do anything is at 10A. But at the other places it is, and I want to remind everyone that when Parliament had a strike last year, when they acted in the manner that they did, they acted on the fact that they were given permission coming from the presiding officers. And so I think we start to rethink how we put this entire thing together, and especially also in light of today of what has happened, that I don't think the process can just stay the way that it is. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I was just, when I read this paragraph, it talks about the Speaker may suspend the proceedings, which means therefore the chamber is not chamber in session. And if the chamber is not the chamber in session, I wonder if the interpretation of the court, it was talking about when the chamber is in session. I don't think there's a holy place called the chamber where a person can commit a crime. I don't think this was the intention of the officers. I think when you suspend it, they need to consider when it is suspended, it's just like them, it's like any other premises. So I think we should retain that chamber in the, where it is suspended. Thank you.
Okay, we're not going to draft here, but we're noting all the good points and issues that must be taken into consideration. The last one, Mashile?
Thanks, Chairperson. I at least just wanted to really say that probably banning police in the chamber, it may not be a good idea, as long as you have that how they get in. You can imagine the Speaker, if you have the President in the House right today, and if there is chaos that has happened, and those members then they fight towards the President, the protectors of the President then will be forced to protect the President. And they may even have to struggle with members to keep them away from the President. And therefore, I think we must just do what other things like that there are extraordinary circumstances that will warrant police to get in. The only thing is that we must just be craft and make sure that then the police will be able to get in under certain circumstances. But banning them completely, I think we may find ourselves wanting it sometimes.
Well,
thank you, Speaker. I want to also concur with what Mr. Honig said, and I agree with that because we are conflating issues here. The one is about removal of members, and the constitutional judgment was based on the powers and privileges of a member and in terms of freedom of expression and saying what you want to say. It does not imply that that now extends to having a gun and shooting someone. So I think we should just distinguish those two matters, and that there should be, because the Act in any case made provision in Section 4 for whenever there is immediate danger to any person or property that security service may be employed. But I think we should just, in our drafting of this, focus on a member in the chamber and how that person is removed.
Honourable members, can I now end this discussion? I think we've read all the danger points and we know what are the main issues we need to focus on. Let us now redraft. No, it's we were not just defined for the sake of defiance. Yeah. I mean, all of us. I don't see anyone who's not deconstructing here. Now, what is the next matter you want me to focus us on?
Would be the composition of your matter particles.
Yes,
the composition of three, it can start working.
Okay, so it can start working?
Tomorrow.
Let's start meeting tomorrow. Let's start meeting tomorrow. Chief Whip will have to apply his mind overnight so that it can start working tomorrow. Because the matter particles meeting, because we actually want to report next week. What else is that?
That's the one on the screen. And then other issues, because I think Madam Speaker was affected by the functions.
Yeah.
And then if you affect all the functions,
yeah,
there'll be no other issue that is very critical, except that some of them really just now was issue. I'm not sure the ones who follow it that way.
No.
They might do that, may not be
necessary. Okay.
Then the guidelines presented and proposed arrangement, in my view, are not really very civic. They have affected the rules and have proposed the guidelines are very simple, assisting and implementing. And then my view that they need to do that.
Clarity on the multi-party committee. Now, this rules must still be adopted by the House. My understanding is that the subcommittee, the current subcommittee, will undertake that task, but obviously taking the spirit of this move. Yes.
When are the rules scheduled for adoption in the House? September is too far. The 4th of August, I'm joking. I want to see a member of parliament who will be here on the 4th of August, looking very fresh. Okay.
There is a rule that must be redrafted. This one, Section 53A. Craig Mason must reconvene to look at that.
We will reconvene also to get the report from the subcommittee, remember? Yeah. Members of Parliament are addicted to it. Honorable Chukwu.
Chair, we would like to again emphasize that we are together here. We are members of the Rules Committee. There is no opposition and governing party. We are all members of Parliament tasked with ensuring that we have got good rules. So any motion that we have opposition here is misplaced. Our apologies. Thank you.
We take that the rules are adopted, subject to that minor adjustment. And that the rules committee will meet next week. Is that understanding correct?
What's the point of not understanding?
The point is, it's unfortunate because it's lower down the agenda. But I think very interesting point of the last subcommittee, which I wanted to make here, because I don't think it's as open and shut as that one. What are the implications of the Constitutional Court judgment on the functional rules and the agreement that we had in your boardroom that the rules would be one primary area we look at whether we've met that? And I mean, there's some significant alterations around committees, etc., that I would like to have a discussion with around that, arising from the Corder report and others, that I think need to be given consideration. I think ignoring the Constitutional Court judgment and the directions that it's made in light of that would be problematic.
Mr. Jenkins, are you ready to give us a report arriving out of our discussions after the Constitutional Court judgment? Indeed, we did undertake that we would comb through the judgment and see what it is that we require as an institution to do, and in particular the rules to be in response to the judgment. Jenkins?
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Honourable Members, good evening.
Madam Speaker, I was requesting you look at specifically the Nkana judgment and whether the requirements to look at the rules. Now, in general, one can say that the Nkana judgment respects this.
Mr. Jenkins, there's a request here that you come closer. The view is that you come next to me, but I won't impose that on you. You can sit wherever where it's easier to see.
In a particular environment, it matters next to who you sit. I'll sit next to you.
Of the judgment, where the judgment dealing with the National Assembly's obligation to hold
of the Executive Council stopped 84 and went its way entirely through to 99. These all resolutions pointing out quite specifically failings of the National Assembly to hold the President and the Executive accountable. It said there that it had another profound obligation to fulfill, and that was to scrutinise the President's conduct and in terms of Section 42 and reports to by the Public Protector. It says that the report was a high priority matter that required the urgent attention. It ought therefore to trigger into operation the National Assembly's obligation to scrutinise and oversee executive action and hold the President accountable. I think Mr. Jenkins is looking at the matter with respect, far too simplistically. I think it goes a lot broader and speaks to how we understand what accountability is, what the various makeups of accountability is, and how we exercise that oversight. And so it says there, as well, at 97, that Parliament behaved unlawfully by choosing its preferred course of action. It second-guessed findings of remedial action, and by passing the resolution, the National Assembly flouted its obligation. Clearly points out severe shortcomings. I think if we're going to, honestly, as Parliament, shift after the Constitutional Court has made such profound and far-reaching judgment, and adopts on our ability to hold the executive accountable and to fulfill our constitutional obligations, I think we'll be failing in our duties to both uphold the Constitutional Court ruling and to the people of censorship. With respect, the Quarter Report made some very interesting recommendations, and which could well be dealt with by this, how we process through our rules, Chapter 9 Institution Reports. Do we have a committee like we have a committee of the Auditor General, a Public Accounts Committee? Do we have a committee that sets up to process Chapter 9 reports? So that when they come to your office, they go to a committee of then deliberator and discuss them. There's a procedure laid out in our rules about how we process these Chapter 9 reports. The Quarter report makes it very clear that there is a synergy between what the work of the Chapter 9 and what they do, and Parliament and the dual oversight role that those two important functioning bodies have to hold the executive and the president and organs of state accountable. What we don't have in our rules is how to ensure that that gets fixed. So there is very much a way for us to get to it. There is also a way for us to be able to introduce mechanisms like questions without notice, mechanisms that members of Parliament can use to further their ability to hold the executive accountable. So with respect, I don't think that the legal opinion goes nearly far enough into what the effects, the profound effects of the judgment are on our role as Parliament. And if we fail to rise to the occasion now, presenting by this judgment, then I really fear what's going to happen in terms of our ability as members of Parliament to be able to do our job going further. And now it was my submission that the Quarter Report and the recommendations contained therein, this judgment and other items served before the subcommittee as a delegated responsibility from this body, and that subcommittee goes through that report, goes through the judgment carefully, and then sees where in the rules we may need to tweak matters here. That's my point.
Maybe you might want to submit written submission because you raise a range of matters. Honourable Jidiba, Honourable Deputy Kwe, and I'm seeing you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you very much for Advocate Jensen for his report. Firstly, I would just say that we go ahead with the rules that they are as we have agreed. Secondly, I note the matter raised by Honourable Skenes, and I agree it's an important matter where, as Parliament, we have to reflect about what are the implications of the constitutional judgment. It may indeed be that it requires the rules, but it also may be how we apply the existing mechanisms that we already have. So I would also say we need to allow our space. I know, Madam Speaker, you initiated a process where you met the political parties immediately after the Concord case. Parties, one of them, FCDP, has requested that we have a debate to reflect broadly as Parliament what does this mean, how do we regain our image.
But actually there's a need for a conversation, and I don't think we can just confine it as a matter of rules, in my view. I think we need to allow ourselves space where we can reflect, what does this mean, and look at all mechanisms that are already available, and look at, in the various rulings that were made specifically on how we dealt with matters of the public protector, is it because there were no mechanisms or not? And if not, did we apply those correctly? So I would really be hesitant that we conflate it as a rules matter necessarily. I'm not saying it may not be that other issues may require a rules change, but I would say let's allow a process of engagement on that matter going forward. Thank you.
You know, I'm so tempted to prevail on Honorable Nebas, but instead of having a lengthy debate on this, we actually do seize on the opportunity to say, in any case, when we have met as political parties, we have said it was not the last time we were going to meet. And I think since then, there have been most definitely two other occasions where the need for engagement has again been restated, albeit around different issues, for instance, the issue of decorum, even today, you know. So I think while there are issues that Honorable Kennedy is raising, and I think Honorable Kennedy is also saying there might well be a need for some of those issues that we would be carrying on in terms of looking at the outcome of the Constitutional Court judgment, that might require coming this direction, but let us engage. Can we agree to engage? Can we just agree to engage? Talk about trust. Talk about maturity. Talk about decorum. Talk about self-respect and respecting one another. You know, these are a range of matters without which we can have 100 rules, but we won't get anywhere simply because we don't get it. And I think really we will get it if we engage. Honorable members, allow me to take us beyond this matter, but to say the best way to deal with this matter is really to go back to that engagement. Now, if we agree, there is this issue of the powers and privileges where there has been also a judgment, and I did want us to come back to say, what did it require us to do? The judgment that had come before the Constitutional Court judgment in relation to powers and privileges.
Thank you, Madam. My understanding of that matter, we're talking about Section 11 of the Powers and Privileges and Immunities Act. The first issue was, it allows a member to be removed by security service from the chamber for something that was said or submitted. That goes against the Constitution, which protects members from being arrested or charged both civilly or criminally for what they've said or submitted to us. And for me, that was an issue in that court case. Madam Speaker, if I can start with the worst case scenario, no matter what rule that we formulate here, the security services, including the police, has a statutory right at this point in time in terms of Section 4.2 to enter the chamber if there's a need, a set out there, if there's life in danger, if property is in danger, and that is without your permission. And that's a policing function. So one can make rules to say you're not allowed there, but they will have that statutory power, and in other words, also a statutory obligation to do exactly that. So that's the worst case scenario. That's the strict scenario where someone physically will start attacking another member, will start burning down or melting down the mace or something in that respect. The issue of a member doing something, a member saying something and disrespecting your authority, I think that is the area where we start looking at that judgment very carefully to say, there's a certain amount of patience that the court expects from the presiding officer. the issue of disrespecting the chair will have to degrade in such chaos that the House cannot be reconvened within a reasonable time. So it's quite a high bar that's been set. Now, Madam Speaker, the court opines, if I can use that word, quite a bit on it. But the matter before the court was the constitutionality of Section 11. So one must look at that, and also at the impaneled judgment, the issue of values is raised quite a bit in those judgments. And I think that is what we need to reflect upon. We have the discussion with the subcommittee, Mr. O'Connor, if I'm correct. So it's on that matter one will have to formulate the rule very carefully. This is not a collegial function that has been carried out, so the security services, in my view, do not belong there to remove members from the chamber, and I would agree with that sentiment. The issue of removal from the chamber, the Constitutional Court agreed with the Supreme Court of Appeal in the Dole case, which said surely there must be a moment when that is necessary. We just need to find that moment and to put that in the rule. That, in my opinion, was what we were discussing earlier. Our various views, to be quite honest, Madam Speaker, I can only repeat what the Constitutional Court has said. But we need to concretize that into examples that we've seen or that even might occur into the future. And in those instances, one will have to be guided by values. Constitutionality, one being one of them, the people-centeredness, accountability, openness, responsiveness, etc., which is mentioned in the Constitution. To craft that rule. But it needs to be there, I would agree with that. It's just how it is formulated and at what point do the authority of the chair is required. So this member needs to be removed for certain statements or whatever it was said. But it's a high bar that the Constitutional Court has set for the House. And I mean, from our office, we are looking into it, and I think the subcommittee after discussion will take that further. But no, that to me is a summary of the Section 11 test. I don't think we are very far off the mark from the discussions I heard earlier. Thank you, ma'am.
So in other words, you would be ready very soon to share a formulation around what could be in response to the judgment in relation to the Section 11 for consideration by the subcommittee and later report to the host committee.
Madam, I just want to say that the Act does need to be amended. And for that reason, there is a motion that has been prepared for establishment of an ad hoc committee which attend to the review of the Act. In line with judgment. So we've circulated a copy of that resolution and are hoping that it could be adopted this coming Thursday by the AA.
Honorable Mashile?
Yeah, Chair, I think the other thing that James may not have indicated is that currently they have provided a reading, which is actually in practice, that excludes members. So the reading is there, it has been provided in the judgment, which is actually now in practice and is only current. But the need still, there is still the need that Parliament should actually confirm that, you know, in the amendment. But that reading, I think, it has got no time bound. It is effective from the legal perspective.
Well, Mr. Jenkins, will you explain to us, simple souls, what is the reading?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The issue of a reading, I'll just stick with the reading, is where the court reads a provision in legislation so that it is constitutional. So it is busy with, I mean, one can call it quasi-legislative function, it's a judicial function, but it's a reading, it's writing legislation in its order. And the court sometimes will give a suspended order to say, well, this is unconstitutional, give Parliament 6 months or a year or 2 years to correct it. In this case, it didn't do that. It said, Parliament, you have rules in place. We do not need to suspend anything. What Section 11 will be interpreted into the future, immediately from today, is where it reads a person other than a member. And that is not there. So it says a person, it read there, other than a member who has or takes part in any disturbance in the precincts of our parliament or a house of committees meeting, may be arrested or removed. So it prevents a member from being arrested for creating that disturbance while a house or committee is meeting. And that's the essence of that. And that's correct. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner.
However, what Masuke was saying stands. Okay? So we will deal with that on that basis. Honourable members, before closing, thank you very much, Mr. Jenkins. No, I have the half, I have a family. Yes, I'm busy competing with my family. Honourable members, there is the letter of the consideration of the request to establish a portfolio committee for budget vote 1. But it remains fair business because there's no way we are ourselves able to consider any other further business except to go home. And I therefore on that note close and promise you that one day if we all behave well, we might go down to the spirit cellar.